Hi, I'm Mike Sklens, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, episode 172, I Miss You. We didn't have a lot of time to record a bunch of segments this week, thanks to PAX East, so instead we're just giving you one huge segment about PAX East. So settle in and listen to Neil and Zach talk all about their time at the show. Enjoy the episode.
I'm Neil Ronahan with Nintendo World Report, and this is Connectivity this week. I'm joined by Zach Miller.
Hello!
We're going to talk about PAX East, which was a thing that we did last weekend. And this is a sad show, because this is the first time that Zach and I are talking since we saw each other in person all weekend, which doesn't happen that often, because I'm in New Jersey and he's in Alaska. So,
right.
A special, special time.
It was.
Wonderful. Mm. I miss you.
I miss you.
So there was a bunch of stuff at PAX East. And just,
yeah, there was.
We're going to kind of front load this segment with the Nintendo relevant information and then slowly dive into complete nonsense, a.k.a. Xbox, PlayStation, board games, what have you.
Yeah.
So I think the best place to start is let's do it with the first thing that we experienced on the show floor, which was the Shovel Knight plushie. I mean, that's just adorable. That's really all I got to say. I got my Shovel Knight plushie. He has a magnetic shovel that you can either put on his back or his hand, and I love it so.
I liked it. I just didn't want to pay that much for it.
Yeah. I
also didn't want to pay that much for their foam shovel.
Yeah, although the foam shovel was also pretty cool.
It was, yeah.
Now, I wound up, because it got mobbed pretty quickly, I didn't play any of the upcoming DLC.
I did not either.
Did you watch any of it, though? Because it looks
cool. I did. It looked brand new. It's got new characters and new enemies. It looked like a brand new game.
And even the way
that same levels.
Yeah, and even the way that you control Plague Knight, where it uses a lot more of his potions and stuff, it's really neat. It's like a remix on
it is.
To a higher level of, like, you know, New Super Luigi U was kind of like a remix of New Super Mario Brothers U, but this is like a remix in a different way in that it's the same levels with a different character, whereas New Super Luigi U was kind of the same characters with different levels.
Yeah.
But that's super cool. I'm very excited for that. And
I think it's coming pretty soon.
I think they just nebulously said soon, probably because if they set a certain date, it would probably slip a month, like the game itself.
Oh, yeah.
The next thing that we saw chronologically, which we won't adhere to rigidly as we get through, is Splatoon, which was fucking mobbed for the entire show.
That was
show.
Even. We got there an hour early.
Yeah. They had a media hour on Friday, and even the media hour on Friday, we spent half of the media hour waiting online for Splatoon. And I think at its longest, I believe the because did you wait on the line again?
No, I just watched the third rate minion guys and Tim Chatton stand in line long enough to not get in.
Oh, wow. So they waited all that time and then the show foreclosed?
I believe so.
Oh. Yeah, I think the line was about 2 hours long.
Easily.
Yeah, which is, I mean, Splatoon's a hell of a lot of fun. Now, Zach, this was the first time you ever got to play the game. What'd you think?
It was. I liked it, but I can see. I mean, I hope there are different game modes than just spray paint everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like that's going to be a main part of the game. I hope they have variations on what you're doing.
They could pretty easily do a deathmatch mode. And I don't know if you had this problem, but, you know, at a certain point, you pick up, like, a bazooka.
Yep.
But it's not, the game's not good about telling you when you have the bazooka.
I would chalk that up a little bit to, like, you're playing it at a giant freaking event.
Sure.
Because I feel like that might be something that would be better served with maybe an audio cue when you're playing the game, which you're not going to hear.
No.
But even still, they could probably make it more visually apparent, because I would just have, like, the demo rep would tap me on the shoulder and be like, hey, man, you got a bazooka.
Yep,
like,
same
oh,
here.
Sweet.
I actually liked how they set it up. They had 8 Wii U's set up with one person on each one, and it was 4 versus 4.
Yeah. That's
must have been local LAN or something.
Yeah, that's the same setup that this was actually the same exact demo that they had back at E3.
Oh, okay.
I mean, so far as Splatoon being playable, we have only seen one demo. Which, I mean, that doesn't say that, like, oh, it's not going to come out in May. I mean, it's just that this is all we've seen so far. We haven't seen anything else.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's probably because they want it to come out in May, so they're not spending their time making new demos.
No, I thought it was a good game.
Yeah. No.
If you're going to have cooperative team-based online multiplayer, you really need voice chat with your friends during the match.
Yep. If it doesn't have that, then I'm very concerned.
Yeah.
I mean,
I liked turning into a squid and swimming around. That was really cool. And I like that you could tap on your teammates to warp over to where they are.
Yeah.
So you don't have to run through the whole level.
I mean, I feel like it just does a lot of smart things.
Yeah.
And I hope that the smart things are expanded upon, like, a really deep game, which, I mean, the early signs are that it probably will be a deep game. And it really needs voice chat.
Yeah.
It really, really needs it.
Yeah. No, none of this in-between matches bullshit.
Yeah. Now let's talk about something that's going to completely divide us, and that's Affordable Space Adventures.
Fuck that game.
Comes out on April 9th. It's from Napnock Games. They're the people who made Spin the Bottle, Bumpy's Party, which was a 2013 Wii U release. What Affordable Space Adventures is that it can be either a one-player game, a two-player game, or a three-player game. The game is I think it's exactly the same, no matter how many people you're playing with. And you control a shitty spaceship, and you're exploring different planets.
Yeah.
What you would do if you're playing by yourself is that you would have the gamepad in your hand. There's a bunch of, like, knobs and dials that you touch on the touchscreen that, like, you know, will turn on your engine. You can then, like, you know, put it into overdrive, take down the thrusters, try to lay low. And that all ties into puzzles within the environment where there will be, like, enemies and obstacles that you come across that, like, you can't make a lot of noise when you cross this enemy. So right. You need to kind of get it so you almost just glide past them. Or you can't use electricity while you're near this enemy. So you need to, you know, use your gas engine to power through. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, it's a lot of just puzzle solving throughout a world. And what you would do...
It's a lot of multi-management.
Yes. There's a lot of, like, you have to do multiple things at once. And if you were playing it by yourself, you would also be, in addition to all the stuff on the touchscreen, controlling the ship around with an analog stick and using the second analog stick to move a flashlight around.
If you were playing this game by yourself, you would go insane.
I'm very curious to see how overwhelming it can be when you're playing it by yourself.
Yeah, it was overwhelming for me, and I was just on the gamepad.
Yeah, what you do...
the gamepad guy does every fucking thing, and the guy on the pro controller just drives it.
Yep, yeah. If you're playing multiplayer, then I think you can use Wii remotes as well. We are using pro controllers for the demos. One player will control the ship with an analog stick. The other player will use the flashlight, which is almost used to, you know, illuminate passages and also, like, scan enemies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you have to work together, which I thought was really fun. And I was under the impression that when Zach and I were playing it, we were having a very good time. And then I talked to Zach afterwards, and he was like, fuck that. I really enjoyed it, though. And actually, my buddy Joe, who was with us, they had two demos of it. He was playing the other demo. I'm glad that he lives closer to me in this instance, because he's also really into it, so I've got someone to play co-op with.
There you go.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm really excited for that game. I think it looks super, super cool. And it's nice to see a company take advantage of the Wii U gamepad.
Now, that is true.
I mean, it's just, you don't it really
felt,
see that.
I mean, it felt, the thing I did like about it is it felt like you were, like, at the helm of the Enterprise, you know, pressing all these buttons on the comm.
Yeah.
To make your ship go. That was cool. There was just way too much going on.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I can see that it's overwhelming, but I think for me, that's part of the appeal to me. It was kind of funny because you ended up not doing this because of traffic, but I played Steel Battalion on Sunday morning at PAX East.
I was jealous of that.
I would draw comparisons to Steel Battalion and Affordable Space Adventures. Not that
I can see that.
Not that it's the same degree of complicated, but like I got my ass kicked when I was playing Steel Battalion.
Sure.
But I was also like, I think it was like a 10-player match, and everyone except for me and like two other people had ever played it before. Or we were I was one of like three people that had never played it before.
Oh, I see.
So I got destroyed, but it was still really fun just like setting everything up, you know, trying to eject at the right time so I didn't lose for reals and stuff like that. Like, that's the kind of feeling that I had during Affordable Space Adventures, which was like, yeah, we failed a lot, but it was fun to fail because, I don't know, like there was something cool in that, like trying to outwit the different environment, like the different puzzles and try to solve them by using things with the ship in creative ways.
Yeah.
I'm that game rocketed to the top of my Wii U eShop desires.
I don't know. I think the next game.
Yeah. You ruined my segue. Damn it.
Sorry, man.
What
are you going to say?
What soared above to the top of my Wii U eShop list, most anticipated, would be Adventures of Pip.
Yes.
Which was a Kickstarter game, I believe, last summer. It's coming to Wii U. It's coming to PC. I think it's coming to Xbox One and PS4. I knew very little about this game going into PAX East.
I'd never heard of it.
I was pretty sure that former WayForward people were involved. Indeed, they are. Adventures of Pip looks like it might be this year's Shovel Knight to a certain extent. I mean, not in the same exact way. Like, I don't think anything can really rival Shovel Knight ever. That game is a masterpiece, but Adventures of Pip looks like it's going to be really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
What it is that you start off as you're a one-pixel hero named Pip in a 32-bit world. Like, that's the hook, line, and sinker of it. And then there's, like, this evil witch that's de-evolving everybody into one-pixel creatures, but you're a plucky hero. And then you unlock the ability to turn into an 8-bit hero and then a 32-bit hero. And what I incorrectly assumed when I first heard about this game and that rough idea was that, okay, so you're going to play some levels as the block, then you're going to turn into the 8-bit guy, then you're going to turn into the 32-bit guy, and it'll be this progression through the game. But that is not correct. What you do is, it's still like you still have to go through and it takes a little time to unlock the other two forms. But when you unlock those forms, a lot of the puzzles are between evolving and devolving from each of the forms. Because, right, like, the block is smaller, lighter, so that way, like, you know, there's one thing early on in the demo where you are in the 8-bit form, but your guy's, like, bouncing on a spring, but he can't get up the wall, so you have to devolve into the block, so that way the lighter block can fly higher in the air. When you're the 8-bit guy, you can punch, you can wall jump. And then when you're the 32-bit guy, you have a big sword and you're very heavy. So you just kind of fall through things, which means you might want to devolve so that way you can wall jump.
Yeah.
And the example that I used when I explained it to people after I played the demo, and also I used it in my impressions, which are now up on the site. There was one puzzle that I came across in the demo in which I got up to an area and I was trying to figure it out, and I started off, I was the 8-bit guy, and I did have a little help from the developer, because I did, like, fail a lot, and he's just like, maybe try this. I'm like, oh, okay, and it was, like, unlocking the key. But I devolved into the block, and then I jumped onto one evolving enemy, turned into the 8-bit guy, did a wall jump, landed on another evolving enemy and bounced off of his head, turned into the dude with the sword, slashed with the sword to take down a wall, then jumped onto another enemy, devolved so that way I could be the 8-bit guy, and then wall jump and then land on a treasure chest.
That's really cool.
And it was just like, how you have to do all that is super cool. And it's, I mean, other than that, it's just a platformer. But if they keep on developing that puzzle mechanic, I can't wait to play more of this game.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
The good thing is it's due out in May. It might not be out at the same time as the PC version. I mean, when I talked to the developers about that, they basically said, like, console stuff can be weird. They're going into early access for the PC game very soon, I think by the end of March. and they hope to have everything out in May, but it might be slightly staggered depending on, you know, how the lot checks and approvals go on, you know, Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft consoles.
Yeah.
But I'm very, very excited for that game.
Yeah, that was and the music by Jake Kaufman.
Yes, which I did not know when we played the demo. Also, couldn't really hear the music because, you know, show floor.
Yep, can't hear anything on that show floor.
Yes.
But yeah, great game. Great game.
So then on Saturday morning, we played a bunch of local multiplayer games that are coming to Wii U. The first one was Toto Temple Deluxe, which...
That was pretty fun.
I don't know.
It
was a weird game. Because
it's a little too chaotic for its own good.
It's like really twitchy. So how this works is it's a four-player game. You're on a single screen, and there's a goat. And it's basically like, you know, capture the goat.
With tikis.
Yeah. And I think there's also, there was another game mode that they showed that was like whoever won the four-player match would then go against the computer in this other game mode where you would get the goat, and then the goat was attached, or you would get a bomb, or a bomb goat, I don't know. And you would have to try to take the bomb, and then the bomb would eventually blow up, and you wanted to blow up the other person in the radius of the bomb.
Right.
Which was kind of interesting. And I guess if they have more variations on that kind of gameplay, it could be very cool. But as it was, like, the way that the characters moved around is kind of like you're jumping, but you're also doing this dash.
Yeah, and like just, headbutt.
Yeah, and it just was kind of weird to control.
I don't feel like the headbutt worked very well with this level design.
Yeah, like I felt like I didn't have a lot of control over where my little guy was going.
Right.
And I mean, that was kind of my beef with that, especially because when we were back at the hotel, we played some Towerfall.
Oh, baby.
And Towerfall is a game where, like, once you understand that game, you know where you're going constantly. Yeah. Like you have total control over your guy. And if you don't, then you better learn, because you're going to lose a lot. Yeah. Whereas with this game, it was a little too chaotic. I think I crave a little more structure in my local multiplayer games.
It like I felt like the game required more precision than you had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that Runbo, which another local multiplayer game that we played, it's a 9-player Wii U game.
Yes.
I feel like Runbo is better designed to embrace the chaos in a way that Toto Temple Deluxe is not. There is a certain chaos in having 9 people running in one direction that is beautiful. The main mode that they had on display at PAX East was the race mode, where it would just start off and everyone would want to run in one direction and get to the finish line first.
Right.
Which you're lucky if 3 people even make it near the finish line. There's a lot of death in this game, but the matches are very, very quick, and it's just a lot of fun. It was very difficult to try to put it into words what made this game work, because it's just like it's nonsense, but really fun nonsense.
Yeah. The taunt helped.
Yeah. Yeah. The taunt is a very crucial part. taunting in any game seems important. But yeah, I also like that we played the Color Master mode, in which I was a total fucking asshole to everybody.
Yep.
I think you can do one person on the gamepad and then up to 8 other people against you.
Yeah.
The person on the gamepad has all these different tools that you can drag and drop onto the screen. Like, there's a lightning bolt that would electrocute everyone. So if they're mid-jump, they're just going to fall right to their death. Right. You can launch something called the Gray Man that then you can control like a normal character and try to beat up the other characters on the screen.
You can reverse the controls, left and right controls.
Oh, okay, that's what that was doing?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Sure.
You can change the color.
I don't know if... Yeah, were you able to do that, changing the color of the landscape?
I would be able to trigger the color to change, but I wouldn't be able to pick exactly what color to change it to.
Okay.
However, I could put big, like, ink spills. So I think, like, what that would do is that would make it so if it went to that color, then, like, there would just be a hole in the environment.
Right. A black hole that sucked everyone in.
Yeah, there was that, too. I had a lot of fun with Color Master Mode.
I liked it a lot. It was pure chaos, but in a good way.
Yeah. I'm very excited for Runbow. That's coming out this summer on Wii U eShop. If you can do that local multiplayer thing, Runbow should be something you're paying close attention to.
Yeah.
We also saw, or I guess you didn't really see it. You kind of just looked at it and then told the developer that it looked very nice and then walked away.
Yep.
That's Sword and Soldiers 2, which looked is by very Ronimo nice. Games. They made Sword and Soldiers 1, which, if you haven't played that, I think it's like $2 on the Wii U eShop. Totally worth it.
Oh, totally worth it.
But the second one, I mean, the single player is sort of more of the same of the original one. I got
different
to play,
different factions.
Yeah, different factions. I got to play the multiplayer where you have one person on the gamepad and one person on the TV, and that was very fun because it was a very elegant way to play that game on one console. Because
then well, that's the only way I think you could do it on one console.
I think they had split screen in the other version.
Oh, God.
Of the original. But yeah, I mean, I had fun with that multiplayer. I'm very excited for that game. That should be out in the next month or two, I think.
Nice.
We also have some other Nintendo stuff. Xenoblade Chronicles 3D. It looks nice. I guess
does it, though?
As
does
nice as really? That game could... It's so tough because it's like my people... Somebody, I think, asked me at one point, like, oh, did you see Xenoblade? How'd it look? And I'm like, it looked beautiful. And then I thought about it. I'm like, I mean, the faces still look like butt. The textures aren't that great. But, like, I just think it's a very pretty game. And I think some of that comes from the music.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, I'm excited to play that game on my 3DS. I'm very excited to play through that game on my 3DS.
Yeah. If I'm going to play through it, it'll be on 3DS.
And then the other thing that was kind of there in a big bad way from Nintendo was Puzzle and Dragons.
Yeah, Puzzle and Dragons Z and Mario.
Yes. So you only played the Mario one, right?
I did.
What'd you think?
It reminded me of Puzzle Quest, which turned me off because I fucking hate Puzzle Quest. But part of the reason I hate Puzzle Quest is it's kind of a buggy game.
Yeah.
Whereas this was much better.
Yeah, I mean, it's, controlled it's a Nintendo much better. Product. That means probably not going to be that buggy, if buggy.
And but you know, I didn't really get into the party system. I mean, I used their attacks, but I didn't understand what the penalty was. And honestly, the demo wasn't designed to show you what the penalty was.
Yeah.
It was just like, here's what you can do.
I
enjoyed it. I don't know if I'll be first in line to play it, but I kind of like those match three games.
Yeah, I'm probably going to play a ton of this game, both this and Puzzle and Dragons Z. I played through both demos that they had of each of the games that will be in one package when it comes out in May. And I talked to one of the guys from Treehouse who was there a lot about the game as well. So Puzzle and Dragons Z has a look of like the overworld almost looks like a Pokemon game. And it's like got a very goofy tone. But like the fights are against like it's more of like an RPG quest. Which, that I think the Puzzle Quest comparisons probably come out even more in Puzzle and Dragons Z.
Yeah.
And that has a system, I might be mixing this up, I'm going on a couple days memory, and I was very tired when I played these demos. I believe that Puzzle and Dragons Z, so you pick your party, and then they each have skills. And what happens is, as you play through the levels in Puzzle and Dragons Z, you have, like, your skills, like, first you have 0, and then it goes up to 6. And then you can use those points to use different skills. The skills cost different points. Like, you know, one costs 1, one costs 3, and obviously the ones that cost more are more effective. Okay. So in that game, you're kind of more inclined to use it because you're going to hit that cap, and then you're not going to gain any more, so you kind of want to keep on using it. With the Mario game, this is where I'm a little shaky on what the specifics are, but with that, you develop those, you build up those specials, and they just kept on developing. So you don't necessarily need to worry about, like, oh, I need to use this so that way I can still accrue more special power.
Yeah.
Unlike Z. But I played the Mario one before I talked to the guy from Nintendo. So I didn't have all the foresight going into that demo as I did with Puzzle and Dragons Z.
Gotcha.
But the one thing that still kind of weirds me out about Puzzle and Dragons in general, as someone who's put close to 10 hours into Pokemon Shuffle... is that it has this thing where, like, you pick up... When you pick up something to move it, there's, like, 5 seconds where you can move it anywhere you want on the board. And it's something that took me a long time to get used to. Like, I probably spent like a half an hour combined on both of those demos, and it wasn't until the end of the second game that I played that I even got a handle on it, because you have to, you're essentially like, you would pick up one icon and then drag it around with the intention of setting up more matches of three or four or more,
right,
and then having it land where it creates a match of three. Like, it was a lot of like interesting planning.
It reminded me a little bit of Tetris Attack.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. But I think I'm on board for that two pack.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was a two pack, but that's exciting.
Yeah, and from talking to the guy from Nintendo, it doesn't seem like they're. I mean, I think they're on the verge of announcing more information about it. But judging by the smile on his face, I have a feeling that this game, despite including two full games, is going to be like $30 or $40.
Okay, that's nice.
So that should be a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah.
Now we get to the point where we're talking about games that we played on the show floor that might come to a Nintendo platform later. Axiom Verge, which is a really cool Metroid-style game made by one guy that's being repped by former Nintendo indie god. I don't know what exactly his term is, or his title is, but Dan Adelman is helping out with it. That game looks very great, and I might as well do a plug for RFN, because I'm pretty sure that Johnny's playing that game right now. So
nice.
Listen to RFN for more about Axiom Verge. I'm sure that Johnny will go super, super in deep on it. I watched a couple of speedrunners attempt that. They had a speedrun contest there, and people were getting really into it. It was very fun to watch. I'm excited to play that game when it comes out on my PS4 on March 31st. And it seems like there might be a chance that it could come to Wii U at some point, but the engine that it uses isn't supported on Wii U. So, like, I think they would have to port it to some other thing, and I don't know if that will be worth it for them or not, but that would be super neat if Axiom Verge did come out on Wii U at some point. But right now, I think they're focusing on the PS4 release, because it is one dude made this game.
Yeah.
And then you played Severed, which is the new game from the Guacamelee developers, Drinkbox Studio.
It was good. It was did you play it too?
I did not. I wound up just talking to the guy from Drinkbox for a while and then left and was like, oh shit, I wanted to play that game.
Well, it's like, you remember those really old RPGs where it's in first person walking like through each room? Yeah, like Shadowgate. Or the Dragonheart Game Boy game.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can't believe I remember that. But it's like that. Obviously, the graphics are better. The art style is almost exactly like Guacamelee.
I think I actually saw something. I think it's a sequel to Guacamelee.
Or is it really?
In the same world.
Awesome. Yeah, it definitely takes place in the same universe. But you control a girl who wakes up and her arm's been cut off. And her family's been killed. Severed, yeah. And she meets a kind of a mystical warrior who gives her a sword, and then she goes around killing monsters in first person by swiping at them with the sword and countering their attacks and eventually powering up a special move that lets you chop off their limbs, which is really cool.
Cool.
There is my only concern with it is that sometimes you'll get in a mode where you're fighting a guy in front of you, but then there's also a bad guy to your left and to your right. And there's not a real easy way to just like tap on the guy because he's on your left or right. So you actually have to swipe the screen or move the stick, to look at him, to attack him while the other guys are powering up their attacks.
Oh.
I feel like it's something you could definitely get used to. It's a strategy thing because you can see the enemy attack timers.
All right.
But it's not clear which one's which all the time.
Yeah.
But you know, it's an interesting concept. I think I'll like the game. They didn't have any release date. They didn't even have a coming
I
soon.
Think it's
they just said 2015.
I think it's summer.
I hope it. Okay, summer'd be nice. The only other thing I don't like about it is that in order to move your character in first person left or right, you have to use the stick. And and it's got to be the left stick. So a lefty like me is constantly moving between the stick and the touch screen.
Yeah.
And that's kind of annoying. I hope they implement the right stick to be able to move.
There was a game I had trouble with that, with being a lefty, but I forget. Oh, I think that, wait, damn it. I'm trying to look. Oh, it was a Color Master mode in Runbow.
Oh.
I hope they have a left-handed mode in that, because when you like put in the Gray Man, which is like a character that you can control, you have to use the left stick to move him around.
Oh.
So I would have to like put the stylus into my right hand for a little bit. But I guess you could also just be tapping on the screen to use the different stuff.
Yeah.
That might mitigate that. I forgot about another game that was there that is coming to Wii U, Rive, which is from Two Tribes, the people who made Tokitori 2.
No, I didn't see that.
I played the demo, and it's like a crazy shoot 'em up that you also have some like 2D platforming segments. It's a twin stick shooter.
Oh.
It seems very fun. I would like to play more of it. And I think it's coming out relatively soon. Nice. But I'm glad that those guys keep on making games, because Tokitori 2, while hard as shit, was really cool.
That's what I hear.
Yep.
Cool.
And there were definitely other things on the show floor. I know that Alex Calafi played SteamWorld Heist. There should be impressions of that. Addison Webb played Neon the Ninja, which is from Josh Hillier and Friends.
Right.
Josh Hillier has been on RFN in recent weeks, so that's neat. But that's about it for the new Nintendo games that were on the show floor.
It was a big PC year.
It kind of always is at this point. Yeah. But even this one, even more so, because like Overwatch was on the show floor.
Right. Guild Wars 2.
Smite's coming out on Xbox One, I think. They had Infinite Crisis, the DC MOBA. That was on the show floor, kind of a big presence. There was a really cool Capcom booth that was modeled after the caravan from Monster Hunter 4. They were selling stuff. It wasn't like there was anything that exciting and revelatory. It just looked really neat.
Right.
But then there's the other part of PAX, the non-show floor part of PAX, where we go and we wander around and we play retro games, we play new games, and we play board games.
Yep, the best part, PAX.
In the retro room, which I felt like I didn't spend as much time there, the one thing that I did do was I played Animaniacs on the Super Nintendo, which I didn't really get into, nor did I really care for.
Nope.
But then we played some Tetris Attack, in which I realized that Zach is a golden god at Tetris Attack. my wife, Lauren, and my buddy Joe were both there, and they are both people who have habitually kicked my ass in Tetris Attack. And Zach handily mopped the floor with them.
I did. It felt good.
Yeah. You were very good at Tetris Attack.
Part of the reason we didn't spend much time in the retro room was because it was always packed to the gills.
It was very packed.
It would take forever to get to the front of the line, and then by the time you did, the console you wanted was probably already taken.
And also that the console you wanted might have a line around it. Like, when we were playing the Super Nintendo, the line to take out a game was literally right behind us.
True.
So it was, like, kind of claustrophobic.
Yeah.
But you played some DuckTales, so that's cool.
I played DuckTales, which is hard as shit. I forgot how hard that game is. But let me tell you why it's hard. It's because the enemy placement is cheap as hell.
Yeah, that's not really a fair game.
If you ever, scroll off the screen a hair and then come back, there's the enemy again. There was a section in the Amazon where you spring up to Launchpad's helicopter and are holding onto a rope, and a bee comes right across the screen to you. I mean, literally, it hits you in midair. There's no way around it, and then you just fall to your death. I'm not really sure how I got past that when I was younger. And then there are also some really tricky, like the moving platforms. Anytime there's enemies and moving platforms on the screen, the frame rate drops so horribly.
Yeah, there's the whole sprite flickering in Mega Man, all that right. jazz.
So it was a hard game. I played a lot of it. I played it probably a half hour. And I actually got a little crowd around me because they were like, oh my gosh, DuckTales, I remember this game.
I know.
And they watched me fail.
They had, like, a Nintendo arcade cabinet there. that was like, I guess it was like a PlayStation 10 or something. But Jared was telling me that he wound up filming some dude beating Contra and then interviewed him. So check NWR TV for Jared talking to some dude who beat Contra on a fucking arcade cabinet.
Nice.
Seems impossible. There's also the current console free play, in which we went over there when we had some free time. And my original intention was to like get Mario Party 9, make Zach play Nintendo Land. But what ended up happening was, as I was standing there, I was talking to people that were with me, that we've never played an Xbox One. So I figured, oh yeah, that the Halo thing came out. And I heard it was busted, but like maybe we can just play some you know, split-screen co-op or split-screen multiplayer. Yeah.
We've all played 1 and 2 multiplayer. They're all good.
I have a lot of fond memories of Halo 1 and especially Halo 2 local multiplayer. Tons of fun. So we go to get the Xbox One, and we got the copy of Halo, and we went to the console that we were assigned, and I put in the disc, and it has to install.
Mm-hmm.
Should have taken out a timer at this point, timed how long it took us, like, time to play Halo. It took probably between 5 and 10 minutes for the game to initially install on the system.
It was longer than that because I was at least 10 minutes because I was out wandering around trying to get photographs.
So at least 10 minutes it took to just install the disc and let us even boot the game. When we booted the game, we found out that it seems like it only installed Halo 4. and Halo 4 single player, because as you might know, Zach, that the Halo multiplayer, when you got the game in order to play the multiplayer, you had to, or play the multiplayer for, I think, Halo 3 and Halo 4, you had to download a patch.
A 20 gigabyte patch.
Something like that, which, oh God, I can't even imagine getting the system and wanting to do that. So we go to play some split screen. It's going to be great. And we have to wait for Halo 1 and Halo 2 multiplayer to install.
Yes.
We couldn't even, like, prioritize Halo 2, because really, when I got this game out, I was like, let's go play some Halo 2 local multiplayer.
Right.
But no, it started installing Halo 1, and that took another 5 to 10 minutes. And then that installed, and we went into it, and it was okay. I mean, Halo 1 is showing its... Halo 1 shows its age a little bit.
The map is okay, so small, oh my gosh.
Because it's a 14-year-old game. Like, that's okay if it shows its age. Still had fun, like, kind of remembering how to play that game. It's been a long time. And then it froze.
And then it froze. The
and then I gave up with the Xbox One.
Then we were so, like, fuck you,
that
Microsoft.
Was probably a half an hour, 40 minutes of my day. And I spent about 5 minutes actually playing a game.
But those 5 minutes were pretty great.
Yeah, no, I had a good time. Like, it's still, if I ever wind up getting an Xbox One, I will probably get that broken-ass game. Because either that or maybe I'll just hook up my Xbox 360. I think I have a copy of Halo 2 somewhere. Maybe I downloaded it to the system if you could have. Maybe I'll just do that instead.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the better idea. Because it actually functions.
Huh.
So there was also an arcade there. Although the arcade was not as cool as it has been in years past. I found out, I think it's the American... No. The ACAM, I don't know what that stands for. I'm trying to think, like, the American Coalition of Arcade Machines, something, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the guys who usually supply it, they're the people from FunSpot, but they didn't have funds, they're a non-profit, to make the trip. So instead, I think it was sponsored by Screw Attack. And
yes,
it was. It wasn't as interesting, like...
Lots of fighting games.
In years past, they would have, like, some vector stuff. They'd have... there was a Trivial Pursuit machine 1 year from the 80s. That was crazy. They always have, like, a... What is it? God, Dirk the Daring. What's Dragon?
Gauntlet?
No, not Gauntlet. The one that's like the Don Bluth animation.
Oh, Dragon's Lair.
Yeah, Dragon's Lair. They had Dragon Lair's machines. Mr. Do's Wild Ride. The original Punch Out. Like stuff like that. Like
I remember that. Yeah,
really fun. They had a very big focus on like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. They did have Primal Rage. They
Primal
had like,
Rage.
Hydro Thunder. And I think they might have had like some multi-arcade things.
There, they had there Blitz too. 2000.
Yeah, Blitz 2000, which there were some people in Mortal Kombat over Blitz 2000, so we did not play Blitz 2000. But we did play Mortal Kombat, which I don't remember how to play Mortal Kombat 2.
Me neither.
There was a time where I knew how to play Mortal Kombat 2. That time was like 7 or 8 years ago.
I forgot that you have to press a button to block.
Yeah, yeah. But
Primal Rage does not hold up.
Yeah, Primal Rage, also a pile of crap.
Yeah, it looks terrible.
Yeah, like this, the weird claymation nonsense.
Digitized claymation. I think it probably looks worse than Clay Fighter.
Yeah, yeah, I think it does too. But of course, the highlight of PAX East has been continually the Johann Sebastian Joust in some random room.
Yes.
Jared and I were actually in a tournament that they had there, and we made it past the first round, but then lost in the second round. But we had a lot of fun, and I was very close to almost making it past the second round.
Yeah.
Addison Webb was also, he ended up, like, they had, I mean, so, like, the whole tournament was basically, like, organized over Twitter. So, naturally, some people who signed up did not show up. So, Addison ended up getting in, and so did Tim Chatton, who, friend of the site. I guess at this point, we've hung out with him two PAXes in a row, so I guess we're buddies now.
Tim got punched in the face.
Yeah, he did. but Johann Sebastian Joust, once again, was incredible and tons of fun.
Amazing game.
We also played that in the hotel room, which is really fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were playing PS4, so only four player, but some nonsense happened in the hotel room, which involved my personal, what I'm still proud about is when I had backed Jared into a corner by the fridge. And I reached over and opened the freezer door to hit his hand and knock him out, which was like I'm so proud of myself for thinking that was even a thing I could do. And it worked so perfectly.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, and I think like Addison got knocked onto a bed. Like it was good times.
Yep.
We also played some other fun multiplayer stuff in the hotel. Like Starwall, which I don't think, did you ever actually play Starwall?
I didn't play it. I was doing something else, but that game looked insane.
Yeah, you're Starwall stabbing each other in the heart. That game's coming to Wii U soon. It's already out on PS4.
Nice.
Very fun. We played some Towerfall. We had two Smash Brothers tournaments throughout the course of the weekend.
Oh, that's right.
On Thursday night, we had a hotel Smash tournament on my Wii U, which I brought.
Amiibos.
Yeah, we had, it was a 12-person tournament. We had six people there. We had six Amiibos in, and I got beaten by my Toon Link in the Lucy's
Bracket. I beat your level 50 Mario.
Yes. America the Mario. and then we had a Smash Brothers 3DS tournament, which with some readers/listeners. Hello, if you're listening to this and you were part of that tournament, thanks for coming.
I got killed, and we did that on the show floor.
I think I made it to the second round in that one. I had fun with it. I started playing as Shulk more, who I think might be closing in on becoming my new main.
Really?
In Smash Brothers. I really like using Shulk, although I'm still kind of learning him. This was a very recent development.
I was a little weirded out by the amount of frame rate issues in local multiplayer
for Smash Brothers on 3DS. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was probably the wireless interference of just PAX.
Could have been,
because we
even
ran into that a little bit when we were playing Runbow on the show floor.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, man, it was...
Yeah,
and with a game like Runbow, you don't want that shit.
Yeah, and it was kind of goofy because, like, I think we all just assumed it was lag, and when we mentioned it to the developers, they blamed it on the wireless interference, and then I think some of us moved closer to the system, and it worked better.
That's true, it did.
So I think it's mainly that. Even still, it's a game where you might have up to 9 controllers connected at once. So, I mean, we won't know until we are in a more normal wireless environment, and seeing if all 9 controllers work without interfering with each other. Yeah, Smash Brothers on 3DS was kind of hard to organize when we were playing it at PAX East because it would just kind of crap out every now and then.
And a lot of people had to update their systems.
Yeah, update their systems, update their copies of the game. That was a little bit of a mess, but we did have fun. We ended up, I think my system was used in like half of the matches. And then it was kind of funny because we had the Wii U tournament and we had the 3DS tournament, and these same two people were in the finals. My buddy Joe, who won both of them, and then one of the third-rate minion guys, Tony, who lost both times. But it was still a lot of fun.
Joe is good at Smash.
Yes, he's my gaming nemesis. If I were to have one. The reason why I'm not good at games is him, because he demoralized me over the course of our friendship. The reason why I am occasionally good at games is because I play against him and he makes me better.
There you go.
Also played some board games while we were at PAX East.
Easily my second favorite part of the show.
What was your favorite? Joust?
The tabletop. Joust.
Yeah.
Tabletop free play is great.
I think my favorite game that we played was the last thing that I did at the show, which was this game called Coup. Like, as in, like, you know,
I was trying to remember what it was called.
Yeah, you're, like, trying to take over a government coup. So the way this game works is that there are, I believe, six different characters or influencers. And there are five different influencers. There's three cards of each influencer that is then put into the deck, and each player is dealt two.
Yeah.
And like some of those, there's like a duke. There's a captain. And on each of your turns, you can take an action. And that action, I think, like the basic action is like you can just take one gold. And then when you build up your gold, then you can pay seven gold to perform a coup on someone, which means they remove one of their cards. And then once they lose both of their cards, then they're out. And you want to be the last person left standing.
Yeah.
Where it gets really fun is that you're encouraged to bluff and lie about what your cards actually are. So what I ended up doing is that I'd still keep track of what I was claiming to be, but I would very often be claiming to be three different things.
Yep.
And some of them are like, you can assassinate people, but then there's one specific card that you can say like, oh no, I'm that, so you can't assassinate me. Or you can take gold from other people unless you have one of two cards, in which then you can say, oh, you can't steal from me. And if the person doesn't believe you, or if anyone doesn't believe you, they can challenge you. And if you're found out, then you lose one of your cards. But if they get it wrong, then they also lose one of their cards. And it got to be really, really fun, because it was all this kind of like, I don't know who's right and I don't know who's wrong. However, Lauren wound up winning every match that we played by just being honest.
Yeah, she did.
That was kind of funny, because I was lying out of my teeth, and I kept laughing. But I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a good game.
Yeah.
I didn't understand. I didn't play it, but I was watching. I didn't really understand that river game you were playing.
Oh, yeah, Suros of the Sea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that game was pretty neat, I think, because what we were playing with, like, six people. And I think what we realized when we reached the end of the game is that really only half of the people really enjoyed that game or understood it. Because what you did is that it's a grid map in which you have these different tiles that then they have like water current on it. And it's like crisscrossing. So that way, like each side of the square of the tile has two currents that then go in different directions. And you have a ship on the outside of it. And your goal is to basically outlast everyone else. You can get thwarted by not being able to place a tile and either guiding your ship off the board or crashing it. There are also monsters on the board that if the monsters move into you, then you are dead. How you decide if the monsters move is you have dice. You have two dice, and if you roll like a 6, 7, or an 8, then you have to roll to move the monsters. Mm. But it was kind of neat. Like I might actually consider buying that game. It was very fun.
Nice.
And then we played that game Talisman that was at your behest, and I had no idea what the fuck was going on with that game.
Yeah, that's
it took very long.
Yeah, it really does. I really like Talisman, but you're right. It really does take forever.
Yeah, like I'd be willing to give it another shot.
Yeah.
But I need to, like, be focused. Like, I was getting hungry and cranky, like...
Yeah. And I think we started playing that game at a bad time because we had other things to do.
Yeah,
I forgot it was such a long-term game.
Yeah, I was working on setting up the location for the Smash Brothers tournament. And
Lauren liked it, though.
Yeah, no, it seemed fun. Yeah, and Lauren ended up succeeding in that game.
Yes, she did. Handily.
Yeah. And we played the Resistance, which always ends in tragedy, it seems.
The spies won.
Yeah. Although the Resistance should have won.
Did they win both games?
Were you not there for the first game? No, you were there.
I was there.
Yeah, no, this. Well, okay, so we played three games. The Spies won two of them. The Resistance should have won the third, but then Alex decided to lie.
Oh, right, for no reason.
The game.
Yeah.
But the first one was Jared with an MVP performance.
Yeah, he played that shit.
Yeah, for people who don't know what the Resistance is, it's similar to Mafia, which if you're listening to this, you might have played that in our forums.
Yeah.
Where there are spies and there are Resistance members, and basically the spies want to trick the Resistance members, and the Resistance members want to figure out who the spies are. There's more to it than that, but that seems like a pretty apt way to sum it up, if I'm not trying to explain it to you, the listener, to play it with you right now. Actually, I had to explain that to a couple people. I'm getting better at it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was, yeah, Jared gets a gold star for his MVP performance at Resistance.
Yeah.
Because I was a spy with him, and I got found out almost immediately. Because I was also, it's also like a game where, you know, you need someone to guide everyone to close their eyes and then have the spies open their eyes and then acknowledge who they are. And I was one of the spies. So I was trying to actually catch staffer Zach Kaplan's eyes because I didn't think he caught mine. But that means there was this awkward pause between when I was like, all right, close your eyes. So I got found out pretty quickly, but then Jared just destroyed everyone. It was amazing.
What was incredible to me was that in the second game,
he did it again.
Well, not just that, but me and Alex accidentally revealed that we were both Resistance members.
Yeah.
And yet we still lost.
Well, that's because Alex was playing the wrong card.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. That is the only reason. Like, that, I mean, the correct assumption was that we figured out four people who weren't spies and we were right. But then Alex thought that that would be boring, despite the fact that's the way you play the game.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there.
It's a good game.
Yeah. That's kind of PAX East in a nutshell.
Can't wait for next year.
In a 50-minute nutshell.
Yeah.
Do you have anything any final thoughts on PAX East?
I look forward to it every year, and I'm so glad that I discovered Joust. And I'm so glad we played more Joust this year. And I didn't really like the bro guys at Joust this year.
I did start following the people who put together that tournament on Twitter.
Nice.
So I'm excited that maybe I'll be more aware of Joust goings-ons in the Northeast.
Well, I'm trying to get my wife to talk to people at her university and maybe open up a meeting room or something for Joust. Maybe once a week or so.
That would be super cool.
That would be great.
We should just have, like, Joust World Report.
Yeah!
What happened to NWR? Oh, man, you don't even know.
Oh, the other thing I want to bring up is that No Name is so good. Yeah, so good.
We went to a seafood place called No Name Restaurant. It's by the pier near the convention center in Boston. If you are if you ever go to Boston or if you're attending PAX East, highly recommend it. It's a good, like, fried seafood place. Very much enjoyed that food. We also went to Dim Sum without Zach.
Yep.
And we, on Saturday night, we wound up at some weird place near the hotel.
Oh,
at 9:00 in the morning.
That was pretty great.
Which, it was really good food, but just like we were like sitting in low chairs. It was definitely like a place that maybe that wasn't a spot where we were supposed to be, but it worked out in the end.
It did, yeah, and it was good food.
Yeah.
They clearly didn't want us there.
it was a very fun weekend, though.
Yeah, it was.
And I'm glad
it's over too quickly.
Yeah. I'm glad I got to spend it with you, Zach.
Oh, me too.
But that does it for this segment on connectivity. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to send us any questions about PAX East or comments, or like you went there and you're like, why didn't you guys come hang out with me? Send us an email and then we can atone for that sin. Send the email to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. I'm at Enron10 on Twitter. Zach is at ZMiller1902. If you want to come and say yo to us there. And we should be rolling out some PAX East coverage over the next couple days. You heard most of what Zach and I have to share on this very segment, although you can go read the words. I have my Adventures of Pip and Rembo articles already both up. I should have stuff on Affordable Space Adventures, Sword and Soldiers 2, and also Starwall up in the next few days. And then we're going to have a lot of other cool stuff on the site in the coming weeks.
Hell yeah.
Enjoy. And I'll talk to you guys all very soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you'd like to send us some listener mail or your favorite shooter music, you can send it in to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And if you've got a moment, please take a couple seconds to rate and review the show on iTunes and help spread the connectivity love.